everyone, this is Jonathan Metz, and you're listening to the newest episode of Radio Free Nintendo, presented by Nintendo World Report. No, I'm not Carl Castaneda, and no, he's not gone forever yet. He actually had some internet problems today, and Mike Sklins couldn't be here either, so I think they're planning on doing something else later in the week. But for now, I am your host, so this is a nice little preview of what the show will be like in the next season, I guess, starting in 2008. So with me here today, I have Michael TYP Cole.
Hey, everyone.
He hasn't been on the show in quite a long time, but you should know him, hopefully, from Radio Trivia Podcast Edition.
Listen to it. Enjoy it. Thank you.
Yes,
that's my plug.
That would be our other podcast involving lots of video game music. If you like video game music, you should find that one. And our other guest today is Greg Leahy from sunny England.
Hello again. How's everyone doing?
There we go. We've had many requests for more European-ish voices on the show, and so I'm very happy to have Greg back with us today. And first of all, I want to apologize for the quality of my voice. I'm a bit stopped up under the weather this week, and so you may hear me getting more nasally than normal, but I assure you it's me and not some robot clone. We will start the show with new business, and I'll go last. So, 2IP, why don't you give us a quick rundown of what you've been playing or what's been going on with you?
I guess the latest is the Mario Party DS review that I wrote. It's up on the site already for a little while now. I gotta say, I've avoided Mario Party for a while, so I was pleasantly somewhat entertained by the game, even though it isn't online. I played it with Windy some, which was kind of neat. Went to Steven's house, and we checked out some features. It was kind of neat. And if you like Mario Party, and you aren't completely bored of it yet, I mean, it's up there, you know? So, you know, if you like...
Would you say that it's like all the other Mario Party games that you really should only get it if you have someone to play it with?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So in this case, that means you should know someone else who has a DS.
Yeah, but you only need one copy of the game, and it works really well, which makes it really a justifiable release compared to, like, you know, like Mario Party 7 or whatever for GameCube, because there was really only one previous portable Mario Party game, and it was for Game Boy Advance, and it was pretty much a single-player game. There was a little bit of multiplayer, but it was not like the real party game.
So, Greg, what have you been doing lately?
Well, last week I got Need for Speed Pro Street in for review on the DS. I've been playing that all week. I should have that up on the site pretty soon, and not in a Carl way. Not to throw him under the bus again, but you know that's the way it's been going lately. It's pretty much what you'd expect, really, from the sort of EA heavily licensed racing game. It's nothing special, and you know how much you like EA tracks may have quite a lot to do with how much you enjoy the game. But there is one.
So it has EA tracks, even though it's on DS.
Yeah, they've kind of scrunched it down in there with. It's not bad. I guess it's admirable considering it's the DS, the sound quality. But at the same time, it's still a bit scratchy. It's not that great. But in terms of the game itself, the most noteworthy thing about it in a weird way is that it has this mini game called Hydraulics, which is actually a part of the actual main career mode as well, as being a sort of standalone mini game. And it's actually just a pure rhythm game. There's nothing to do with racing at all. You just tap the buttons, the face buttons, along to one of the licensed music tracks that's in the game. And that's it. That's the mini game. That's some of the events that I thought it was incredible. Number one, you'd have something that was so completely tenuously linked to racing in a racing game. And number two, that if you were going to have a mini game in a DS game that was completely out of place, that it wouldn't use the touchscreen or the microphone. Other than that, pretty standard stuff.
Is the rhythm game fun?
It's actually surprisingly hard. It's quite taxing because it seems like such a throwaway idea. You would think, well, they'll probably make it, you know, pretty easy and just a bit of fun, but it's actually quite challenging. Sometimes it kind of gets in the way of getting on with the proper racing event, so in that sense it's not great at all.
Is it a good rhythm game, or is it just challenging? Because there's a difference between challenging and just plain just bad and fr- frustrating.
Well, it's pretty simplistic. There's nothing sophisticated about it. It's just not totally dumbed down. So it's kind of passable. But as you might expect, they haven't poured any significant resources in it to make it especially good. But it's just so out of place. It's very odd. But it's I guess maybe some people might find it kind of fun, but I just thought it was a bit odd.
Yeah, it reminds me of a mini game in THQ's game Cars for DS that came out a couple years ago. And that's all I'm going to say about that game. So, all right, is that all you've been playing, Greg?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was still playing through Mario Galaxy for the second time alongside that. That is probably the only game that of such an appreciable length that I've played straight through twice from the first playthrough to the end of the second. I didn't put it down after finishing once to picking it up again. It was just that much fun.
I think I did that with one of the Zelda games. I think it was either Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask. It's funny because I just finished getting 120 stars last night. So this is actually makes it very convenient for our first topic, I believe, right?
I've got about 100 stars in Mario, and I haven't played it in probably 2 weeks. I've been too busy with other things, other games that I've been reviewing. But I'd like to go back to it, but there was one star that really frustrated me quite a bit and made me not so eager to go back to it, and that was the second time that you have to use bombs to blow up garbage.
That's hard.
It has to be one of the hardest stars in the game.
Definitely. Yeah. It was one of the last ones I got on both playthroughs. Even though the second time I knew exactly where it was and I was kind of prepared for it, like I'd worked out how to do it from the previous time, it still took me a bunch of tries. It is really quite tricky.
So I spent about an hour doing this, trying to get that star when I first found the spot. I eventually gave up in complete frustration. And it was like maybe the fifth to last star I got, but when I went back, I got on my second try. It's like, I think that it's one of those situations where the harder you work at it, the more stupid little mistakes you make, or you know, slightly inefficient moves you make, and it adds up.
Well, the problem that I have with it, and the thing that makes it so annoying to me, is the same problem I have with throwing fireballs in that game.
Yes,
that it's so difficult to aim, and I think it makes it very obvious why Miyamoto and the team behind Mario 64 didn't put the fire flower in Mario 64,
exactly.
Because it's so difficult to aim that sort of thing in a 3D environment. And Galaxy really doesn't do anything to fix that. They just say, well, hopefully by now people have figured out how to do it.
Well,
I guess.
And also,
they've made it limited.
Yes, that's what
it
I was
is very
say.
Limited.
I mean, because if you look at most of the items, they all kind of make an almost unexpected kind of return. With an expanded use, like stuff like wall kicking off waterfalls with the ice flower, or you know,
oh yeah, that's really cool.
Or like the bee, or the bee suit, you know, flying all around the sea slide galaxy, or things like that. There's always some way. I thought this was only going to be for a couple of stars, but they bring it back and make it sort of more justified. With the exception of the fire flower, that one never really takes on any kind of more meaningful participation than any of the others.
Yeah.
It's there because people wanted it and they listened.
And I have to say, one of the things I regret about the 3D Mario games is that they haven't figured out a way to balance the power-up suits so that you can use them indefinitely like you could in the 2D games.
Mm.
And I think the reason that they were able to do it in the 2D games is that there were so many enemies that they could basically say, well, you can keep this cool raccoon tail until you get hit.
Mm.
But you get hit often enough because of the density of the action that it's not overpowered. And in the 3D games, it's so easy to avoid enemies, and the enemies are incredibly non-aggressive. I mean, most of the enemies in Mario Galaxy will completely ignore you, even if you're standing. I mean, you have to be standing right in front of them. You know, I'm thinking like Goombas and stuff like that. Most of the times I get injured fighting enemies like the Goombas is when I misjump.
Yes, misjump or spin too early.
It's kind of it's difficult for the wrong reasons, unfortunately.
Well, I kind of
I don't want to knock Galaxy because it's brilliant. There are certain things about the 3D Mario games, and that's especially combat, that I still don't think they figured out how to do it well after three or four games.
I think that's interesting because it's an interesting contrast to the Sonic series, which kind of has the same small little pitfalls, but they've been magnified in it because they didn't have the insight and notice these problems. They never really solved the whole homing attack thing, which obviously they added because it was hard to jump on people in a 3D environment.
Yeah, but it doesn't work right.
It doesn't work
right. It just sends you careening off into the pit, which is ridiculous.
Exactly. And I don't think they really recognize that. And a couple other very simple things about, you know, going really fast that just make the Sonic games very aggravating. In 3D, I tolerated it the first time because it was kind of neat, but after that, it really kind of got taxing.
Well, anyway, enough about Mario. We only talk about it every single week here. I can talk about what I've been playing a little bit. I am to the very end of Trauma Center New Blood, and I'll be reviewing that probably before this episode goes up. And I love it. You know, I like it so much. It's not much different from the last Trauma Center game on Wii. The production is better because it has voice acting, and the voice acting is very good. It's
really
way above average. Yeah,
it's
quite good. And the story is more interesting. And actually, the biggest compliment I can give to it is that, you know, one of the complaints I had about the first Trauma Center is that you do some interesting things in the first couple of missions where you're resetting bone fragments or operating on someone's heart, and then basically you kill guilt for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And there's like five different kinds of guilt, but it gets old after a while. It's like every single mission is guilt, guilt. Oh my God, there's a new kind of guilt. And New Blood is so much better balanced. Even very late into the game, you're doing brain surgeries, heart surgeries, appendectomies, liver transplants, burn treatments, all kinds of crazy stuff. The variety of operations is so much better. There are more operations on it. The extremities, it's not, everything's not in the gut like it was in the last game. It's just some very, very cool stuff. And a lot of it is just minor expansions on what they've done before, but they just put more focus on it and give it a little more room to breathe and do interesting things with it. I like it a lot. And I have to say, the characters, the main characters, the two doctors that you can choose from in this game, well, they're both of them are present throughout the story. They always operate together in the story, and that's how you're able to choose one or the other. But both of those characters are very interesting, extremely well acted, and they honestly have more appealing personalities than Derek Stiles did in the first game. He was kind of a little whiny. He starts out very immature and slowly grows into a good, responsible doctor. Whereas the doctors in this one really start out being very mature, very serious, and yet not too serious, you know. But they're not like little kids either. Like, you actually feel like, oh, well, these are doctors. And they're serious professionals, even at the start of the game. So anyway, that's Trauma Center. And I've played a little more My Word Coach, which I guess I talked about last week, and I'll be reviewing that very shortly, too.
Is it Happy New Year yet?
Is it what?
Is it Happy New Year yet?
It's definitely past Christmas, but I don't think we're to New Year yet. By the way, the game did tell me Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or something on when the DS registered that it was the 25th.
Nice.
I got to remember to reset my calendar once I finish this game. But it is a good game. I'm a little less enthusiastic than I was when I first started it because I'm finding that the variety of little mini games that you can play is not huge. And one thing I don't like about it is that in order to make your daily progress, you have to basically succeed at identifying a certain number of words. And the number gets up pretty high very quickly. So like right now, I think I have to do like 120 or 150 words per day to increase my expression potential factor by 1% or whatever. It's like your brain age. And the problem with that is that the game only gives you, say, 50 new words a day. So you end up doing the same words over and over again. And there aren't enough mini games to get you that many words to fill up your quota for the day, so you have to play the same mini games two or three times in one session just to fill up your expression potential. So this is like a very simple problem that they could have very easily adjusted to just make sure that you don't have to do more words in a day than you have mini games available to do it, so you wouldn't have to repeat them unless you just want to do them more than once.
Right.
But the design of the game is such that you have to play the same mini game two or three times a day just to meet the quota that it gives you for your training. And that's kind of pathetic. I mean, it's just a bad idea. So, yeah, I still think it's valuable. I have actually learned new words, and I've been reminded of words that I had seen before but never really knew what they meant. So I'm pretty impressed with the capability of it to teach you new things, because that's something that you don't really get out of video games very often, and it really is effective.
My vocabulary sucks.
I still have to say it's pretty good.
Now, one interesting thing about My Word Coach, actually, is in this country, they're doing a sort of big celebrity DS marketing push with people like Patrick Stewart and things, and they're actually pushing that alongside first-party games. So
Patrick Stewart plays My Word Coach?
Apparently he does. Well, he does for money, anyway. And the thing is that, like I said, it's interesting because you've got, you know, the classic sort of, you know, brain training or whatever that these celebrities have played, but it's mixed in with things like Hotel Dusk and My Word Coach, which I think is kind of, it must be a big bonus for Ubisoft to actually have their game pushed alongside, you know, the system and with all these celebrities attached to it. So clearly Nintendo think it dovetails very well with their overall approach to, you know, selling this handheld to people that wouldn't normally buy them.
Well, Michael, have you happened to see the have you seen the TV commercial for My Word Coach here in America?
No, I honestly know very little about it, other than it sounds like I could use it because my vocabulary completely sucks.
But yeah, I think it's a useful little application. But the TV commercial for it is very interesting. It's not like any video game commercial you've ever seen before. It looks like the kind of commercial they used to sell you a piece of exercise equipment.
Oh.
So they have like a very slick looking, professional, business looking guy telling you about all the benefits, and they're like showing the price down at the bottom of the screen. It's all done in this infomercial style. And they show testimonials of people who have used it.
Oh.
They talk about, I couldn't believe how many new words I was using.
That's so cheesy. Oh, it's brutal.
It really is cheesy, but then again, I was watching it and I was thinking, you know, this is really a brilliant decision, because the typical gameplay/cinema scene type of game commercial wouldn't work at all for this game.
Yeah, that's true.
And it wouldn't appeal to the people that they're trying to sell this game to in the first place. And
I would never have thought
of doing an infomercial for a video game, but it's essentially like a little 60-second infomercial.
Does it have a blue screen at the end?
No, but it tells you the price of the game and where you can buy it.
Okay.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, it was the first thing that attracted me to the game, because I thought, if they're marketing it in this way, this must be a very interesting game. And in the same way, I don't know if you've seen the commercials for Assassin's Creed, but those also were very unusual commercials in the way they were presented.
Oh, over here, they've just got Massive Attack playing over sort of slow motion cutscenes. Is sort of very, I don't know, it's kind of what I would expect. Is that what they've got over there?
I don't know what Massive Attack.
It's like the theme song for House. You know, House.
That
music. It's that exact same music, but just laid over, you know, real time footage of Assassin's Creed in slow mo and stuff like that.
Yeah, the commercial for Assassin's Creed that I saw in America was essentially entirely gameplay footage, and it said nothing about the game. It was just showing you this guy running around in cutscenes, jumping across buildings for the entire length of the commercial, and there was some music over it. It was all very cinematic, but there's no explication whatsoever of what the game is about or anything. And at the very end, it just says Assassin's Creed, and it tells you the system that it's for.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same then. I mean, it may well be identical.
I found it interesting in that it kind of lacked the typical overlay titles and things like that that you see for video games.
Or trying to be funny.
That's quite off tangent, so off course. So that's the main thing. Those are the two things that I've been playing really this past week, because I'm reviewing both of them. And the other thing that I did last week was attend the fundraiser event in Denver. That's FUNDERAZOR. It's a charity party benefiting Child's Play, and it's hosted by basically the guys at Kotaku, Brian and Jesse, I think it's the other guys. No, Joel. But they do these parties, and I think the last couple were only in Brooklyn, but this year they did one in Brooklyn and also one in Denver, which is pretty close to where I live. So I drove down there with a couple friends, and I wasn't exactly sure what to expect, but they had it in the back theater or the stage room of this bar, and room held about 200 people. It was completely packed by halfway through the night. I couldn't believe how many people showed up for this thing. It was like a $10 thing at the door, or you could give another $10 to get an extra raffle ticket, which I did, but I still didn't win anything. The only prize I got was a Guitar Hero 3 t-shirt that Brian Crescente from Kotaku threw out in the audience. He had so many t-shirts that he didn't even bother calling out raffle numbers. He just threw them out in the audience, and I caught one. They had the main part of the party was that they had rock bands set up on the stage of this venue. So you got to go up and play the game up on a stage as if you were a real band. And so they had a TV up on stage so all the band members could see what was going on, and then they split the signal out to a big projector on a big screen out in the audience so everyone could watch. And it was a very interesting atmosphere. There was a lot of catcalling. Like, if you didn't do well in your performance, then people would boo you. And then they would also cheer if you failed out of the game and your bandmates saved you, which is a feature in the game. And then it was really unexpected to me, but because of the singing part of the game, it shows all the lyrics scrolling across the top of the screen, and on this big projection screen everyone could see it, and so the entire crowd would sing along with the songs. And so it was like this giant karaoke party more than anything.
Wow, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and sometimes people would kind of pay attention to the drummer, especially if the drummer was really good. But what was funny to me is that you think of the guitars being the main part of this kind of a game. And the thing is, because the guitars don't allow for really any personal expression, and the people who are playing the guitars are watching the screen so intently that they're not really doing anything else, they're just standing there, everyone just kind of ignored the guitar players, and they were really in the background, really, of everyone's attention. So it was cool. I got to go up on stage once, and we tried to play the Boston song, "For Play a Long Time," and we tried it twice, actually, and unfortunately we had a couple of newbies in our band who had absolutely no idea what they were doing.
No.
And we failed the song both times, and I was very disappointed. I was rocking it out. I actually had some compliments from the crowd about my singing, and I was hoping
to
go back.
Oh man, wow, that's gotta have had some bad singers there if they're complimenting your singing, Johnny.
So you say.
And you know, it's bound to be a tough crowd at a charity event, you know.
Yeah, actually, they were a pretty tough crowd in general. I was hoping to play guitar because I wanted to try the rock band guitars or drums, but there was a line of well over 50 people throughout most of the night to go up there and play. And of course, they could only have four people at a time on stage, so it was a slow-moving line. Never got to go back up after that. But it was a cool event, pretty much very classy. There were tons of door prizes, and next year, if you have a chance, if you're within driving distance of one of these parties, then I recommend you go. It's a fun time. So I think that's all we have for new business, and we'll take a break and come back with listener interaction and the news. So stick around. We'll be right back. All right, we're back with our listener mail. This week it's from Ryan. This is the same person who wrote to us last week. And we'd love for other people to email us as well, so we have a little more variety. But Ryan has a good question here. First off, he He admits that we had a good laugh at his expense last episode when he wrote to us with the Metroid fan fiction about Samus escaping some penal colony or something, and he had some very valid suggestions in there that I thought were pretty interesting, but it was a funny context of his email anyway. He suggests some kind of drinking game where you have to take a shot every time someone mentions escaping from penal colony. Which you could probably have a pretty good game out of that from last episode, because it was a recurring joke.
Do you have to chug a pitcher of beer if you ever watch the film Fortress?
I love Fortress. Actually, I have Fortress on DVD.
Oh, now that's cred right there. There you go. Keeping it real. Christopher Lambert. That guy's got rage.
I know, man. He has like two emotions and he uses them.
Oh, there's this great film called Resurrected where it's like Christopher Lambert in Seven. And you can imagine how well that turns out.
In Seven? Yeah. As in the David Fincher movie?
Exactly. You know, but he's like the Brad Pitt character. Okay. But look, you know, actually he's like Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman rolled into one.
And oh, nice!
So he's kind of the good, you know, the sort of charming young cop, but also the wise head that knows what the killer's up to. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I think he could pull that off because Christopher Lambert does have the voice of five men rolled together.
All right, what's the question there, huh?
His voice is incredible. Anyway, so Ryan says, since Resident Evil 4 Wii Edition sold over a million copies and Umbrella Chronicles seems to be selling respectably, do you think we can realistically expect another RE4 style game on the Wii?
Well, my answer would be a bloody well hope so, because if we can't get that, I don't know what, you know, because that looks like a banker. You've got an engine that works, you've got proven sales figures. Why wouldn't you do it? I mean, you know, if we can't get any, even to that extent, original content on the Wii that's adult, I'd just say give it up right now. It's not going to happen.
Absolutely. And this is from Capcom, a company that never met a sequel it didn't like. So yeah. I honestly cannot imagine Capcom giving up this opportunity.
So, well, they're putting a lot of resources towards Resident Evil 5, which clearly is being made for Xbox 360 and PS3.
Yeah.
I can't see them, quote unquote, porting down. I guess potentially they could like adapt the RE4 engine and use the same like game floor plan or whatever.
Maybe. I mean, we don't really know how RE5 plays, so it may be quite different from RE4. But I have to think, you know, Capcom. I have to think they're looking at the possibility of doing some kind of downgraded port of RE5 for Wii, because really right now that's where the audience is, oddly enough.
Yeah,
and they established that last generation with the GameCube.
Or perhaps at very least something they could brand RE5, even if it were like a side story or something. I think they'd like to get that attached to it at least, like Umbrella Chronicles, but with Resident Evil 5 subtitle.
Okay, so know. Resident Evil 5 Advent Rising or something. I don't know.
Crisis Core.
Crisis Core, there we go. That's what I was going
Crisis
for.
Crisis Core RE5. Yeah, it could be something like that. I don't know, we'll just have to see, but I think you can guarantee that there will be more Resident Evil games on the Wii. And you know this I've already forgotten the subtitle of it, but this computer generated Resident Evil movie.
Degeneration, I think. Maybe.
I saw a couple screen caps from it today. And it looks fine. It looks like Leon is in it, actually. So that is probably an excellent candidate for some kind of game of the movie of the game to be released on Wii. If they're looking for something other than RE5 to put on the Wii, I would think some kind of adaptation of the movie story is probably a very good bet.
How will that work?
They make a new game from the RE4 engine based around the story.
You know, I understand. I don't think that would work very well. I mean, I don't know. A game's structure is different from a movie structure, and we know how well, generally speaking, a movie plot translates into a video game. So unless it's like the sequel to the movie or something like that, I worry about that. And we know.
Yeah, I'm hoping it would be more of a supplement to the movie rather than a direct adaptation.
Yeah.
But if Capcom is essentially making the movie themselves and they make the game, I have to think there's a good chance that it would turn out well no matter how they did it, because they're just in complete creative control of both.
And there's a sort of economies of scale there where, let's be honest, they don't put the most effort into their story. So if they put all this effort into making just a story for a film, they may as well, cash in on that and save having to come up with a story for the game for a game.
Right. Okay, so thanks for the question, Ryan. Hopefully you're satisfied with the lack of joshing at you this week. And we'll move on to virtual console games, the new ones this week in America, at least. Greg, do you know what came out in the...
Well, Cybernator did come out.
Is that Friday?
Cybernator came out last week in addition to Pokemon Snap that came out the Monday before that. That was the headliners.
Okay, so you guys are pretty much on par with us right now.
We are for the most part, although there was one big difference. We got Mega Man 2 last week. And my understanding is that you don't have any of the Mega Man games yet, which is just...
No, we don't.
John is excited. I really don't care.
Well, I'm marginally excited because I've already got Mega Man Collection and Mega Man X Collection for GameCube. Although, with how bad the port of Mega Man 2 is on Mega Man Anniversary Collection, because they screwed up the controls and everything on it, I am almost positive that I would buy it on Virtual Console. It's only one of my favorite games of all time.
No, I need to play
Have you been playing it, Greg?
No, I haven't downloaded it yet. I'm on the fence because as an NES game, it's going to have a pretty bad PAL conversion. So I don't know whether I want to play it in the borders of the slow speed when it's supposed to be as good as it is.
I understand.
So I'm kind of... But still, kind of... As usual, we have a victory, but it's kind of a bit of a Pyrrhic victory, really.
Wait, I mean, they haven't fixed the slowdown hertz issues on the...
It's a labyrinthine issue. It varies by platform in terms of, TurboGrafx never had a PAL conversion, so that's fine. The import games are fine. Some of the PAL conversions are terrible. Some of them are quite good. It's a bit of a mess. But no, they haven't just put in a 60 hertz progressive scan mode for everything yet. Not even close.
Okay.
Greg, aren't you working on some kind of feature or something?
Well, because amazingly, it is really difficult to find reliable information on which games are affected and which aren't. And I've been trying to collate what's out there into kind of one thing so that people could just reference that. And at least, I'm not going to download every game on the Virtual Console, I think that goes without saying. But at least it could give a rough guide of what people could kind of expect if they are downloading Virtual Console games. Especially if you've got component cables, because, I like Progressive Scan, and I would kind of like, you'd like to know if you can have it.
I don't understand why there's still slowdown. I mean,
well,
there's
what
slowdown
it is,
in these games?
Yeah, well, it's not slowdown, they just run slower. If you know what I mean, which perversely...
I understand that, but that was based because it was based on the timing of how it draws on the screen.
That's right, because it's 50 hertz, 60 hertz. Yeah,
but
exactly.
Why is that still a problem, though? That seems like a technology issue that's solved.
It shouldn't be a problem. There's nothing stopping them from putting up the two ROMs. There's nothing stopping from putting up the 60 hertz ROM that's American, say, for the UK audience at least. And the original power. It's purely because they're trying to be completely faithful to the ones at the time that we're getting it exactly the same. It's this all. So yeah, it shouldn't be happening. Right.
But you don't want them to be completely faithful.
Absolutely not. No.
Right. Oh man. Yeah, I totally understand that, and I sympathize. Well, for everyone else, I'm sure this is a good sign that Mega Man 2 will be coming to the U.S. at some point in the future. And all I can say is, go ahead and save up your 500 points for it.
So what came out here?
Remarkable.
What came out in the U.S.?
All right, so this week in the U.S. we have Cybernator for Super NES, Alien Storm for Genesis, and Monster Lair for TurboGrafx CD.
I know nothing.
Continuing
about
the stereotype that TurboGrafx and TurboGrafx CD only have Wonder Boy games.
Yeah, until we get Akumaju Dracula X anyway. Hopefully.
Yeah, and I'm not... I think they're going to wait quite a while for that because it just came out on PSP.
Exactly, they're going to put some distance between that if it even happens at all.
Right.
Wow.
So have you guys ever played Alien Storm by any chance?
No.
I don't know anything about it.
I saw some screenshots today, and it looked like a sci-fi version of Golden Axe, which is quite unappealing to me.
Yeah, definitely. Good lord.
But I did download Cybernator, and I'm recommending it for fans. I think it's a surprisingly good game. It sounds very generic from the title, but I think it's surprisingly good. It's sort of a slower, somewhat clunkier version of Gunstar Heroes.
Huh.
It's the same kind of gameplay, basically. You run around and you shoot in many directions. You can lock into a direction. There's a little bit of flying around, hovering, depending on the stage, which is somewhat interesting. And it's difficult, but not brutally difficult like, you know, a lot of shmups and things like that are on Virtual Console. You can make it two or three levels in your first try, and then if you go again, you'll probably get farther based on what you've learned.
Okay, how about compared to Contra 4? Is it, you know, how's that kind of balancing?
I haven't played Contra 4. That's on my pile of shame, and I'd like to, but I'm sure it's much less difficult than Contra 4.
Yeah, I hear that.
It's much less difficult than Contra 3, which I have on Virtual
Console.
See,
I always thought that was quite easy. Contra 3. Yeah,
it's full of columns of fire blasting out of nowhere to kill you. It's full of so many things that you can only dodge if you memorize exactly where they
are. Well, yeah,
it's full of things that just pop out of nowhere and kill you, and there's no way to dodge.
The one thing that was absolutely rock solid about that was the last boss, the brain thing with its.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that because Wendy and I were actually playing that a couple of months ago when I was over at his house. We were playing it together, and those overhead levels where you have to like navigate through the city or whatever. Oh my god, those are impossible. I have no frame of reference.
Yeah, they're the easier bits. You just got to get used to them. You've got to be persistent and just get used to them. Once you get acclimated, it's not the madness
of the
main game.
Yeah,
those are really much easier than the side-scrolling levels in general.
That frustrated me.
They're just weird.
To put that in context, though, I think I played Contra 3 not long after playing Super Ghouls and Ghosts, so anything would seem easy after that.
Yeah. Right. So the other game this week is Monster Lair for Turbo CD, and that is also known as Wonder Boy 2, so it's yet another Wonder Boy game. Hudson seems intent on releasing every single game in the series, even though they all appear to be more or less the same thing. And the weird thing is they're releasing them across three or four different systems.
Yeah, I lost track of what was what a long time ago, and
it's incredibly confusing.
I have no desire to actually clear that up either, really.
No, I don't either. Dan Bloodworth of GameTrailers.com was telling me that this Wonder Boy game plays almost like a side-scrolling shooter, but it has very cartoony. To me, TurboGrafx games look like high-res NES games. I'm so incredibly unimpressed with the graphics on that system.
Yeah,
and
that's
I think it's kind of insane to add a CD feature to that system because it really doesn't do anything for the visual quality.
Well, you know, the Sega CD really didn't do all that much from what I've seen to improve Genesis.
Right.
I mean, you could get CD quality audio. I guess the picture looked a little better, but it was you're still basically using the same graphics processor, so it's really in the audio.
I think we can all agree that CD-ROM drives were far ahead of their time in the 16-bit era and quite unnecessary.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and actually Nintendo realized that too. They just shouldn't have waited another 6 or 7 years before changing their minds about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we also have NPD sales numbers this week. These are for the month of November. Usually the biggest sales month of the year for video games, and certainly was the biggest for Wii and DS. Nintendo DS sold 1.5 million units. That's completely insane.
Yeah.
That is more than PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, and PSP added together.
And PSP is pretty strong, isn't it? I mean, the PSP did well.
PSP did quite well. It sold over 500,000 units. It's, you know, it's like a third of DS, so not bad. But, yeah, DS is really dominating everything right now. And the weird thing is, if you think about the game releases for DS this holiday season. There hasn't been a lot of really good stuff coming out for it. You've got Zelda, and that's about it.
Yeah, you don't have anything that's good. Dang.
I mean, Contra 4, but nobody's buying that.
I assume not. No,
I mean, there are a couple of good games, but certainly they're not selling these systems. These systems are selling sort of by themselves, and I think it probably has to do with these bundles that they release that people feel like, well, I can just buy the system and not buy a game. But it speaks volumes that Nintendo DS sold well more than any other system, and yet there are no DS games in the top 10 software sales.
That's kind of scary, honestly. Amazing. I'd like to see some more quality first-party games coming out, because I was very disappointed in Phantom Hourglass, and I'd really like to see more action-y games that are good.
Yeah, what shocks me is not Phantom Hourglass, which I think is a fine game, but it's just that like Nintendo seemed to hinge their entire holiday season for DS on that one game.
Yeah, and it was
and
like
the game
it was a 3
really
month.
Didn't sell that well.
No, and it was like a 3 month lead in. It was like, wasn't it October or September in America?
Yeah, it came out in October, and there really has been nothing else since then. I mean, Nintendo dropped a couple of turds like Masters of Illusion, but nothing that anybody cares about, you know. I'm a little surprised, honestly. It seems like Nintendo, at this point, is content to pretty much let the DS sell itself.
Yeah. Although, one thing I would say, in this country, I mean, brain trading is just dominating the charts in software.
It's true.
I mean,
it's still selling well.
It's like two of the top five for the last over a month at least, you know, the whole holiday buying season. So it's interesting that it doesn't seem to be sort of penetrating the U.S. consciousness in the same way that it has done with Europe.
Not in the same way, no. I mean, Brain Age is successful here, and it sells, I think it's usually just under the radar. It's like in the top 20 maybe every month. And it does that month after month. So eventually it racks up massive sales, but it just doesn't fly off the shelves like a game like Mario or Call of Duty.
Yeah,
does.
It's a slow and steady, kind of like I guess Pokemon did in the beginning in Japan.
And Nintendogs has been kind of the
same. Yeah, it's one of those things where people buy the game and give it as a gift with the system. I mean, a lot of people give it to their girlfriend as a gift. I mean, I've heard more than two or three this year that they say, "Yeah, I got it for my girlfriend," you know, as a gift. So,
I also seem to remember Iwata sort of saying that he had to chide the Nintendo of America about the fact that it wasn't selling as well in America months ago, so I guess this is nothing new, but it's still going on.
Well, I hope Reggie is chiding Iwata for not selling more copies of Mario in Japan.
Yeah, that's really criminal. I mean, they should get it.
Well, it's doing just fine in America. It sold 1.12 million copies in November, and that's actually more than Nintendo sold Wii's. The Wii sold 980,000 units, so there were actually more Mario's sold than there were Wii's.
Maybe some of those disappointed prospective Wii owners that didn't get a console just thought, "Oh, bugger it, I'll buy Mario anyway."
Maybe.
No, I think it's a sign that the installed base of Wii is actually going out and buying new games that come out, and that's a very
it's astonishing, story. Isn't it, to think that? Because apparently it's not happening in Japan.
Right.
All these people have Wiis and apparently are quite content with the Weather Channel as being the killer app for the machine.
Well, I think Wii Fit is doing pretty well in Japan. It's not like a mega success, but it's doing far better than.
But that is sort of premium price because of the accessory. So it is a bit of a different.
It is.
Dynamic.
It's about $80, but people are going out and buying it. So I think you'll see the same thing in America when it comes out next year. Looking at the top 10 sales, obviously Mario is the second best selling game this month after Call of Duty 4. Guitar Hero 3 doing very well across multiple systems. And one thing I noticed on this list that seems a little odd is how many mature games are on here.
Yes.
We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 out of the top 10 games, and some of those are multiple SKUs, but 6 out of the top 10 are rated M. So our next story is Miyamoto versus Insomniac. Oh boy. Insomniac being the Sony, well, not Sony owned actually, they're independent, but they develop exclusively for Sony by choice, and they developed the Ratchet and Clank games as well as Resistance Fall of Man on PS3. And in a recent interview, and I don't have the exact quote here, I'm sorry, but to paraphrase, someone at an Insomniac who worked on Ratchet and Clank said in an interview that he didn't know if the spherical worlds and galaxy were inspired by the Ratchet and Clank series, but if they were, he would be flattered because he loves Miyamoto's games. I'm not sure where he got the idea that maybe they were. Someone else a few days later asked Miyamoto about this idea that maybe the inspiration came from the Ratchet and Clank series, and Miyamoto said quite plainly that they've had the original game, the original idea for gravity-based spherical worlds in Mario games since immediately after Mario 64 came out, and they've been doing experiments with it for a long time. And actually, they showed one of those experiments publicly at Spaceworld 2000 in a little demo called Mario 128, which was, or was it 100 Marios? How did that go?
I think it was like 100 Marios, yeah.
Yeah, but it was these globe-shaped worlds with 100 or so little Marios running around. And the concepts in that game eventually became Pikmin as well as Super Mario Galaxy. and I should note that that game came out before the original Ratchet & Clank did, which I think was 2001.
What, Pikmin?
No.
The demo.
100
yeah,
Mario games. Yeah. Yeah.
Was that the end of 2000, so actually?
Yeah, so Nintendo actually publicly showed this idea before. So if anything, Ratchet & Clank possibly took this idea from Nintendo.
I doubt it.
So anyway, but, I doubt it as well. But you know, if anything, that would be the chronology of it. So anyway, regarding Ratchet & Clank itself as a series, Miyamoto told the interview, "I'm sorry, but I have to admit that I've never seen the game in question. Is it a PC game?"
I can totally believe that, because they're so insular over there. You know, it's kind of like that quote.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that quote where he says he could make a Halo. It's kind of, you know, suggests he doesn't really know what Halo is. A Halo, you know what I mean? I think that.
Yeah, you have to assume that Miyamoto's never played Halo. He's never played Ratchet and Clank.
Exactly.
And this sounds like a dig taken out of context. You know, it sounds like he's kind of winking at the interviewer and saying, "Oh, is that for PC?" But no, I that doesn't seem like Miyamoto, and Miyamoto has said many times over the years in various interviews that when people ask him what kinds of games do you play that you don't make, and he says, "Well, none. I just don't play games that I'm not working on. I don't have time and I'm not interested in them. I do my gardening and I play banjo and guitar and I play with my kids." So
yeah.
It doesn't surprise me at all that he's never heard of Ratchet and Clank, honestly. It's not that popular in Japan anyway.
Right, but keep in mind there are other developers, you know, involved in Mario Galaxy and any other Nintendo game, and I'll be honest with you, I did feel like when I was playing Mario Galaxy, there were times I felt like there were hints or the feel of another game kind of creeping its way in. Especially one or two times I really felt like I was playing Shadow of the Colossus, and it was there was, like, for instance, there's one level where you're climbing a large tower kind of in a water island, and the music is just kind of epic, you know, because it's orchestrated and it has whatever the trumpet player. It sounds a lot like Shadow of the Colossus when you're climbing one of the colossi. And I don't know, just you're climbing up and there's the music. It's like I'm playing Shadow of the Colossus with good controls. So so it's like, I don't know if it's one of those issues where it's like good minds think alike, or one of the people in the development team kind of played it and so it kind of has that feel, or what. But you know, it's not like, you know, a lot of ideas are based on the same things a lot of people have seen, you know?
And a lot of people have pointed out that many elements in Super Mario Galaxy are probably inspired by The Little Prince,
yes,
which is a famous children's book, which I have not read. I'm interested in checking it out,
though. I think there was like a 22-episode cartoon based on the book. I don't know if there was a series of books.
Oh, really?
Or what, but I remember seeing like a DVD set in Best Buy or something. So.
Well, the first thing I thought of was the training planet that Goku learns to train on in Dragon Ball Z in the first season. So, and that goes back to the 80s, and it's not that original of an idea. It's just the way that they use it and the way that they put it together into a whole game.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I totally appreciate what you're saying that, you know, Miyamoto's clearly not the only person who works on these games. It's questionable how much direct involvement he had in Super Mario Galaxy in the first place. But it doesn't surprise me at all that he would not be familiar with Ratchet and Clank. But certainly, I'm sure other people on the development team were. That still doesn't mean that they took the inspiration from Ratchet and Clank, because, as he points out, that technology, that concept, they've been playing with it for about 10 years now. So
that's also,
I think it's kind of preposterous to suggest that that the game was inspired by Ratchet and Clank, which is in itself kind of a ripoff of a couple of Rare games like Jet Force Gemini and Banjo-Kazooie.
Well, also keep in mind, they're tinkering around with this kind of stuff, and that's one of the reasons why we don't see a Mario game every year or every 2 years. Because, you know, they may have two Mario projects kind of going on, one short-term, one long-term, but they're not pounding them out, you know?
And yeah, and also, the way Nintendo works is that they play around with a lot of concepts. Like, do you remember the Talent Studio or the Talent Maker game that they stage, what is it, stage something?
Stage debut.
They showed it at E3 multiple years, and people were always like, what is this? When are you bringing this out? And Nintendo's like, no, that's not the point. We just want to show you some ideas. This is not a game. And that's the way they do it, and Nintendo may be, you know, the core concept of the next Mario game may be already running on a development kit somewhere at Nintendo, but it doesn't have Mario in it. That's kind of the way they do things. It's just like how they brought Pikmin out of that 100 Mario's demo.
And the funny...
So they really start with the concept first, and then they add characters
And
later.
The funny thing is, they like shared their concept with their competitors, who then ran with the stage debut idea. And well, I mean, maybe they didn't get it from stage debut, but you gotta wonder, you know, because...
Yeah, I think it's very risky for Nintendo to show those kinds of gameplay concept demos at a trade event like E3, where you have all kinds of developers walking around and can see it, because Nintendo usually is so secretive about what they're working on. You know, they don't want people to steal their ideas, and yet they put these ideas out here in the purest possible form in a venue where they know many developers are walking around.
Well, I think that just shows to me that, you know, they didn't think that necessarily just the idea of a spherical world was anything that earth-shatteringly radical, that they even showed it with the Mario 128 or whatever.
You know, and that's absolutely correct.
They obviously didn't think it was, you know, sort of patent protected or anything when they was doing that.
Right.
It's all in the implementation of the game, not the concept. It really is.
Exactly. So anyway, Miyamoto is not making fun of Ratchet and Clank. He's probably just never heard of it.
I don't know.
Until
he
now.
Rings off some pretty good zingers sometimes, Miyamoto, you know.
Yeah, he's a funny guy, but I don't think he's that mean. You know, I don't think he would say something that
Yeah,
nasty.
Especially when they said, like, we'd be honored if, you know, that were the case, you know. It was a compliment to him.
Right, yes. You from the original quote from Insomniac, they're clearly very big fans of Miyamoto. And that's why it's strange to me that they are not familiar with that Space World demo. If they're really big Miyamoto fans, they should probably be more familiar with
Although
that.
Although I would
thing,
say you pretty much have to say you're a Miyamoto fan, because it's kind of like if you end up saying that, you know, like it's kind of, if you denigrate Miyamoto in any way, because like say the Wii is a piece of shit and it's two GameCubes taped together, and then you'd be getting calls from your executive overlords and told to apologize immediately.
Right. Okay, well, next story. Square just today announced some release dates for their games, and quite a few of them are coming to Nintendo platforms early in 2008. We've got Dragon Quest Swords, something about a tower and a queen and a sword or something like that, coming out on February 26th. That's been out in Japan for a while, and from what I've heard, they're actually making a number of additions and improvements to the North American version. So that may be something to look forward to. We have Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Ring of Fates, that's the DS game, coming out on March 11th in North America.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, I just have no interest in Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles.
Completely natural.
That was a good yawn. I'm actually interested in it. Supposedly, and this is just based on their press release, but they say that there's like a fully fledged single player game as well as a four-player multiplayer game in there. So it's kind of geared in both directions instead of being retrofitted for single-player.
Yeah,
like
but is that going to be fully-fledged single-player, sort of like Metroid Prime Hunters, fully-fledged single-player?
Or maybe Four Swords Adventures?
Yeah.
Four Swords Adventures actually is surprisingly
fun.
It is,
but it's not a completely separate or dedicated single player game.
No, certainly
but
not.
It is fun. Oh,
no.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that this game, unfortunately, does not have online multiplayer, which means you're going to probably have a hard time finding people to play through the entire game with you unless you just have a really hardcore group of friends who play DS a lot.
The more things change.
So that's too bad.
The more things change.
But anyway, maybe online is something that they'll add to the American version, as Square does that kind of thing sometimes. We also have The World Ends With You, which is a DS action RPG coming out sometime in the spring. And that is actually a non-Final Fantasy, non-Dragon Quest game from Square. So what a rare treat. So our next story is about Wii Supply. Obviously, the Wii is very hard to get this holiday season, pretty much everywhere in the world except maybe Japan. But there is some relief coming, I suppose. Reggie hosted a conference call a few days ago where he mentioned that there's a lot of supply coming into the chain in North America this week, and so by the time you hear this podcast, they'll probably all be snatched up. But maybe you got one a few days earlier, I guess. Supposedly they sent in a huge chunk of them into the chain. I honestly have not heard anything about whether anyone has had any easier time getting them. Have you guys?
You know what? I've been so isolated from this whole I can't find a Wii scenario. To me, it's like it may as well not even exist, and everyone's going to hate me for saying that. But
yeah.
The only time I hunted for a Wii outside of when I got mine at launch was when I was visiting my my former roommate from college, who lives maybe like 45 minutes away from me. He's been saying, yeah, I haven't been able to get a Wii, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, let's just go there after lunch to Best Buy and see. And so we wandered into the Best Buy, and we wandered, there aren't any Wiis out there. We say, hey, do you have any Wiis? He's like, oh, yeah, we just got a shipment. I'll get you one. And so it was the first place we tried, at least I tried with him, and it was really easy. And part is that at least Best Buy doesn't immediately put product out in the store shelves, which is very frustrating. Whenever I go there for new games, I have to like ask. So right. That's part of it. Don't be afraid to ask salesmen if you don't see the Wii out there. But I may have just been an isolated incident where it's really lucky. I don't know. Obviously, it's going to be harder this time of year than we're talking 3 months ago. But I'm not the right person to ask how hard is it to get a Wii, because I got mine at launch, waiting in line. And then, you know, I have lots of friends with Wiis too, so
Yeah. I have at no point been a reliable source for information on getting a Wii. I think probably a lot of listeners will remember about 13 months ago we were talking about whether you should worry about pre-ordering for a Wii or whatever. I was like, nah, just walk in on the first day and you'll be able to find one. And I honestly could never in my wildest dreams have imagined that a year later it would still be very difficult to find one. I think that's insane. I mean, it is a problem on Nintendo's end. They really have not done a good enough job of producing, but at the same time, there's only so much they could have done, and they have made some improvements, but it's pretty clear that Nintendo doesn't want to stock up in warehouses or anything like that. They basically want to produce them on demand, and right now they're at the very cusp of pissing people off, and they're just barely avoiding that, and they seem to be pretty content with that.
Well, they probably would have to like start up a second factory or whatever, an extra factory. How many do they have now? I don't know. And that's a big cost. And they probably, you know, they're very much about making a profit on every unit. And I'm sure they could still make a profit even if they had a new factory, but not as much of money. And they want to make money.
I don't want to tell Nintendo how to do their business. Clearly, they're successful at what they're doing. But most companies around the world, if they had the hottest piece of electronics in the world, they would not have a problem with starting a new factory.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just
a
big fixed cost kind of element, and they're just very conservative. I think you have to assume that's just, I mean, Nintendo are conservative. That's why they never sell their hardware at a loss. I mean, it's not just because they want to make a profit on hardware. It's because it's just, if it bombs, you know, in the software department after you sell to people, you know, at least you didn't lose a ton of money in the first place.
That's exactly it. It all comes down to the corporate mentality of Nintendo, and It's just interesting that it's kind of biting them in the butt right
well,
now.
Well, I mean, there was an analyst sort of projection, sort of like MDB Capital, I think, that said that they basically left $1.3 billion on the off the registers because they didn't get enough Wii's in. So this kind of idea that Nintendo was sort of constricting the supply to sort of create hype is somewhat deflated by that. I mean, that's a serious price to pay for hype, no doubt about that.
Sure. Absolutely, and it's a big risk that they're taking, and you know, eventually they'll have to decide whether it was worth it. But you have to know, this holiday season, there are some people who are buying other systems because
Absolutely.
They can't get a
Wii. Oh, of course they will.
I mean,
oh,
if you're,
no doubt.
If you're, you know, if you can't find one on the retail shelves, and you have to go to eBay, and you see that Wii's are selling for $600 on eBay, suddenly the PS3 looks like a very good deal.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's...
except some people are going to buy a PS3, decide they don't like it, and sell it, and then get a Wii. That's what my friend did.
Maybe eventually,
That's what my friend did.
Come on, they're going to play Lair for 10 minutes, and they're going to think, this is the best thing I've ever played. I'm glad I didn't get a Wii. Screw Mario.
Well, not only PS3, but the 360 has that new arcade unit, which is a slightly updated version of the core unit that they had before. But it's reasonably priced, although it's not reasonably featured in my opinion.
Yeah, but maybe that was the idea. Maybe it was literally the Wii substitute pack. It's like, well, it's in the same price range, so if you couldn't find a Wii, just buy this. And those kinds of people.
You know, it's only $30 more than a Wii.
Exactly. And those kinds of people that are just like, oh, shit, I couldn't buy a Wii, I'll buy something else that's the next nearest in price range. They're not going to give a shit it doesn't have a hard drive. They have no fucking idea what a hard drive does for the system or not, in all likelihood.
Exactly, and if you imagine that a lot of these would-be Wii buyers are parents, grandparents who are buying for younger people, and that certainly that's a percentage. Some of them are buying for themselves, but some of them are buying for younger people, and they probably don't know a whole lot about it. They figure, well, they're out of Wiis. I could just buy this other thing. It plays games too, and it costs about the same.
Yeah,
and especially when you consider all the bundling that even retailers are doing, crazy bundles sometimes with Wiis. The other systems are actually cheaper.
Yeah.
By the time that you have to buy a copy of Table Tennis that you don't want.
Yeah, Sonic and the Secret Rings. Yeah, that's a favorite for bundles.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So anyway, one of the so-called solutions that Nintendo is proposing for the current Wii supply shortage is a rain check feature that they've cooked up with GameStop stores all over the country. That would include EB Games also. They're owned by the same company now, and I think most of them are changing their names. But the idea is that you can go in and, I guess, put down $10 or something and get a rain check that will guarantee you a Wii by the end of January.
You have to put down all the money.
Okay. So, in other words, this is a terrible deal.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't even a program. It's not even a feature. This is standard GameStop pre-orders, officially sanctioned by Nintendo. They've just slapped a different label
on it.
Yeah,
pretty much.
They're calling it rain checks instead of
pre-orders. You know, and I just...
And you have to put down the entire...
I find this absolutely incredible from the point of view that you could see something like this coming from a mile off, because they've been telling us they're not going to meet demand for months. They've been telling everyone that'll listen, look, you know, we just can't make them fast enough. They're selling too much in the summer. We're not going to build up inventory. We're not going to have them. So why did it and considering, as you said, this is just sanctioned pre-order, so it's not really a move. Why would you wait so long for such a sort of just something that's just PR?
Why not let us buy a rain check in August that will guarantee us a system before Christmas?
Just because you do get negative, but this is a PR move. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't think it's going to get them many more sales, or, you know, it really is just a PR thing. And, you know, because
I think it's kind of offensive.
Well,
really,
because you had like pieces, you know, these puff pieces they do on all, you know, family struggling to get their Wii at Christmas, and they always have to have the disgruntled guy that's like, oh, you know, I couldn't get it, it's a disgrace, I'm going to buy something else just to spite them, whatever. You know, and it's like, okay, so this would ostensibly be appeasing those people, but you could have done this months ago. You told us it was going to happen. Why is this being announced on a conference call after Thanksgiving? It makes no
sense. It's like we got into the month of December, and all of a sudden Reggie's like, oh my God, we better do something about this.
I mean, if this was the most comprehensive program ever that actually did something, maybe I could... Well, that took a long time to put together, and you had to cooperate with the retail chains or whatever. But this is just PR nonsense. There's no substance here. So they could have done this months ago.
And the best part is there's a quote from Reggie, and I didn't pull it up for the show, but there's a quote from Reggie saying, "Well, at least with the rain checks, the kids will have something under their tree."
Oh, yeah.
I'm astonished by the audacity of such a comment, because what kid is gonna open up a little envelope under the Christmas tree and say, "Oh my God, I'm getting a Wii in 30 days! Woo! You can't play a rain check on Christmas."
Nintendo
night.
Has
it's that is absurd.
Nintendo has invented the white lump of coal. There we go.
Yeah. In other words, you can put this slip of paper under your Christmas tree to tell your kids, "By the way, I wasn't good enough to get the toy that you wanted before Christmas."
Yeah, didn't have the resolve.
They'll love that. They'll be beside themselves. Okie doke. Well, one last news story today. In the same teleconference, Reggie answered a couple of questions about Wii voice chat. Online voice chat, of course, for Wii games. And he said, "Our system has the capability for online voice chat." Duh. What it comes down to is finalizing the peripheral. I would not be surprised to see that capability come to this system. Now, the interesting part of this for me is finalizing the peripheral. It sounds like they've been looking at quite a few things, and they're just trying to figure out exactly what form to do it. What do you guys think?
It comes for Smash Brothers. I mean, that's the hope that, you know, that's going to be the final surprise for Smash Brothers, is that in addition to those wonderful little text taunts, we will actually have voice chat, because, you know, Smash Brothers is all about profanity for me. And
I like it. I don't think it's going to happen, honestly.
I agree. I don't think it'll happen, but I'm going to cling to that for a while yet.
I think maybe the developers...
I think it'll happen eventually, but not in time for Smash.
Exactly. The Smash Bros. Developers are clinging on to the hope that the peripheral's there for them to use it. It would be really funny if they built in a hook into the game so that somehow once the peripheral comes out, you can actually use it.
Well, they've been so thorough with things. I mean, I suppose that is somewhat possible.
The Ethernet adapter was compatible with the original firmware, even though I don't think that was on store shelves for another couple of months. So, I mean, it's not completely impossible, especially if they can find some hook to say, okay, look to see if this download that we may have in the future for as like a patch update is in the Wii memory, and if so, use it, you know?
Well, the thing is, I mean, Wii already has two USB ports on the back, so it should be pretty simple to get headset support.
Now, you don't want a cable headset. You're doing a Bluetooth headset, and surely the Wii could...
You'd prefer not to.
Why not?
But, I mean, it should be... What I'm saying is, it should be easy for developers to go ahead and include support for voice chat in their games, because they can test it with the USB ports. And then later on, when something else comes out, you know, maybe that'll be compatible. I don't know. I mean, the ideal situation for me would be some kind of dongle that you can plug into the bottom of the Wii remote, and then you can plug in the nunchuck or whatever into that as well. So it'd be like a dual-ended attachment, and that way you'd have a wireless headset built into your remote.
I think voice chat is kind of almost critical to justify Nintendo's online strategy, because I would be willing to enter friend codes if I know I could communicate with those people, because it's giving you. So it's like, you know, if you enter the code, that's the price you pay for being able to communicate, you know, to make sure that, you know, you're not someone they don't know or whatever. But because without it, friend codes are just—they're not justified to me. You can't justify them.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's so critical in any kind of online game. You have to be able to communicate with the people you're playing with, especially a team-based game, but even competitively. And in PC games, they got by for a long time without voice chat, because you had keyboards and you could pretty quickly type a message over. You can't do that on a Wii game, so you really have to have voice chat in order to communicate effectively.
They could do that for like lobbies or whatever, I guess, you know, while you're waiting for a match, because you
but that's not
the same.
I mean, that's needed as well, but you also need some kind of communication in the game. Otherwise, you might as well be playing against the computer.
Exactly. Yeah. So
you can't really tell the difference.
And of course, Smash Brothers will actually sub in a computer player for dropouts on the anonymous game, so it's even more like.
That's right. You may not know whether you're playing a computer or not.
Yeah, I think. At least the people in the know are going to wind up doing things like Skype or some other voice over IP. service while they're playing Smash. And that's really annoying, so you got to set up separate...
Which is completely consistent with the Wii simple-to-use concept.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. It's not even viable for me because my computer is in a different room.
Oh, so is mine, but I guess I could play Smash on my monitor.
So now you have to rip out your Wii, pull the sensor bar off the telly or whatever.
Exactly. It's a complete mess the way it is now. They really need to do something about it. And it's very promising to hear Reggie. It sounds like he's open to the idea. It sounds like they may even be developing
we'll see
if that ever sees the light.
Paradoxically, it might actually make me more angry if it comes just after Smash Brothers, because like, why couldn't you get this done sooner?
Well, we could still do it in Mario Kart.
Yeah, well, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Okay, well, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll have a very brisk feature topic. So, see you on the flip side, Rob Guadalache. And we're back with the feature topic. So I've been thinking about this lately. As a Nintendo fan and owning primarily Nintendo systems for the past few years, I've grown pretty much accustomed to never being overwhelmed with the quantity of games that I want to play. It seems like I always kind of move on from one game to the next. Usually there's a couple of weeks or a couple of months in between them. And at most, I might have two games to be playing at any given time. Maybe one for a console, one for a handheld. And what struck me is that this is the first holiday season in a long time I can remember that there are actually more Nintendo games out than I have time to play or than I have money to buy. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about which Wii games we would like to be playing and we just haven't gotten around to yet, and maybe why. One of you guys want
sure,
to
start? Sure, yes. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no, please, TYP, go ahead.
All right. So first off, I'm not sure I agree with this whole concept of this feature because I don't think there are any DS games right now that I'm interested in playing.
But let's focus on Wii.
On Wii there certainly are. I just got Fire Emblem and I have not opened it yet. I probably should open it because I know I'll like it. So there's Fire Emblem. I know there's some other games that I've seen. Like I'd be interested in playing Mercury Meltdown Revolution, and let's see. I know there are a couple other. I guess I'd be curious about the Trauma Center sequel. I didn't really like the first one, but it sounds like the second one may address a lot of my complaints. Let's see. What else is there out in Wii? I'd be interested in Zack and Wiki. I'm sure there's some others I can't think. Oh yeah, Umbrella Chronicles. But I'd kind of need a second person to play with. I'm gonna buy that game.
All right, and what about
Like I said, well, Zack and Wiki would be on it if it were out, because I am very eager to play that game, but it's not out here, so that's it.
It's not out here.
There's a few. Super Paper Mario, first of all. As I said, it kind of got lost in the end, in the build-up to Metroid and Mario, but I definitely want to go back and play that, because I got Paper Mario on the N64 Virtual Console. I really liked it, and I know Super Paper Mario is quite substantially different, but I'm still intrigued. Yeah.
It's not different enough.
Well, there you go. I'm pretty confident I like that on the N64. I'm going to like Super Paper Mario. Mercury Meltdown Revolution is actually another one I would like to, because that's been out for ages in Europe, and it's actually quite cheap now. Well, it was cheap to start with, but it's even cheaper. So that's pretty good value, because I understand there's quite a lot of content in that if you actually like that kind of thing. And other than that, I would say I almost feel guilty for saying it, but Resident Evil 4 Wii Edition, I would be interested in playing that, because it's just been like years now since I played through it on the GameCube. I'm kind of ready for another playthrough, maybe. But that's kind of overpriced here, because it didn't come out proportionally. You know, it was $30 in America. It didn't come out at that kind of 60% retail level over here. It was more like...
That's hard to justify, then, if you still have the GameCube.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to come down a bit more, but that would be on there. And Trauma Center, the first Trauma Center didn't come out for absolute eons over here. It was ridiculous delay. And now I'm still kind of thinking, well, wait for the second one, because it does sound better. But yeah, that would be on there if the new one had come out again, or if the first one had come out earlier.
This is funny because, Greg, your reasonings for not being able to play these games are different than mine and TYP's. Because
yeah.
A lot of the ones you want to play just aren't.
Well,
there,
there are.
That,
well,
that
Super
really
Paper
sucks.
Mario is there. I mean, that. But I mean, there's a
right.
lot of games.
That's been out for a
it's,
few
it's
months.
Since September,
but...
yeah. Like, it was just before. But I kind of played Metroid solidly until I got Mario. I played Mario solidly for and then I had Need for Speed for review. So I mean, there's a lot of games. I got Zelda, Phantom Hourglass, and Contra 4, but I haven't played them yet. I'm sort of saving that for Christmas now.
Ah.
So it's kind of affected my DS as well.
Right. For me, the games I was thinking about when I came up with this idea were definitely Zack and Wiki is a game that I want to play. And actually, my friend Kevin got that for Christmas, so I'm probably just going to borrow it from him when he gets done. I'd like to support Capcom with my sales money, but I'd like to support myself with my sales money also, more than Capcom.
What are you selling, Johnny?
Yeah. And actually, I'm glad you guys both mentioned Mercury, because that is a game that I've been curious about ever since it came out on PSP like 2 years ago. And after reading Wendy's review of it, which is glowing, and realizing it's only $20 here, brand new, $20. I can't pass that up. I mean, I'm hoping I get it for Christmas. I put it on my wish list, but if I don't, I'm picking it up as soon as
it really
over.
Looks solid. I mean, and it's low dev for them because it's about half or two thirds recycled from I think the first PlayStation portable game. But I wouldn't care.
Right.
I wouldn't know any different because I never played it.
Right, and I've heard it's actually substantially improved by the controls.
Yeah.
Which is nice, isn't it? Rather
so,
than just shoehorned nonsense
yeah.
controls,
but,
actually something functional.
Right, whereas most games that are ported to Wii are worse because
yeah,
of the controls.
Yeah, so the only real thing holding me back on that game is I know that there's some... my Achilles heel, and I always bring it up. I'm red-green colorblind, and there's some color-based challenges, and I'm... From what I saw from what Wendy showed me, it may not be an issue, but anytime there's like a color-based puzzle, I'm hesitant because I run into
yeah,
trouble.
I understand. I think that's a fairly small part of the game, but okay,
so,
good. Well, maybe you can get someone to get you past those parts. If you
usually
have trouble.
Trial and error is enough for those.
Right. It's kind of like playing a game in Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You just try it over and over until you get lucky
yeah.
and find the right sequence.
But
of things to do.
I'm thinking back on what I answered, and there are actually some virtual console games that I'd check out as well, or haven't. I own like a Super Metroid, which I really want to go through because I never really played it.
You got to do that, yeah. You got to do that.
It doesn't take.
I know.
That long.
No,
I've been nibbling away at it. Thing is, I was playing like Zero Mission really recently, and so I was like, I'm kind of Metroided out, so I want to do a little bit here, do a little bit there. Mm-hmm. I think there's some other virtual console games I haven't downloaded yet that I'm interested in as well. I just finished up Sin and Punishment, which I'm happy. Well, finished up. Okay,
finished
in
it?
Quotes, I beat it on easy. Okay.
Oh, it's not. It that is one game that gets so much better on the higher difficulty levels. It is not the same game. There are more.
You really have to play it.
Okay.
There are more.
That's why.
But there's
it's
more
different.
Bosses. The bosses have different routines.
Oh wow.
It's more. It is not the same game. I promise you. It gets
okay.
so much better. I mean, I played that game compulsively to the point of I could beat it on hard without losing a life. It's just and
I'm not
going to
be there.
And the thing is that it's not.
Greg, I'm very impressed.
But that
right
is
now.
No, you shouldn't be because it's nothing to do with how good I am at the game. It's how good the game is that it makes you play it that much. If you get into it, it's
wow.
compulsive stuff. It's so good.
The controls are a little wonky, but it's kind of funny because every time I go back to play it, it's like it takes me a couple of minutes to adjust the controls.
Well, you're sort of playing two games
yes,
at the same
yeah,
time,
exactly.
so it's understandable that the controls would be a little confusing.
I never really got home with it on the virtual console, the classic controller. I couldn't quite remap my brain quite as well to that as I could with the N64. The N64 pad was not great in an absolute sense, but for Mario 64 and Sin and Punishment, it worked very well.
Okay.
For those two
Alpha
games,
and Alpha and Omega of the N64, there got the pad
right. Right.
Let's see. So,
well, I did have one other real Wii game that I'm looking forward to catching up with in the next couple of weeks, months, and that's Geometry Wars Galaxies. And here's another game that I think it's only $40. It's some kind of reduced price
yeah,
right now,
sure.
And it just looks awesome to me. I've never played the Xbox version. I don't have an Xbox, but I was always interested in it. And just reading Aaron's review of it, it sounds like there's so much cool stuff to do in it. I really like the idea of getting this little option helper guy and upgrading him as you play more and more and more. And I'm really excited to try it out. And I love the idea that you can put a demo on the DS too. That's pretty
I
awesome.
really like the sound of that, but I hear that the DS version has all the content and, in fact, kind of controls better.
I'm sure it controls better if you use the default scheme. I mean, the Wii controls never sounded that great to
Yeah, so
me
it's
anyway,
classic
but you can
controller.
play with a classic
Yeah.
controller. In that case, it's just as good as the Xbox version.
Well,
So I have a classic controller, so that's not a deterrent
And
to
the
me at
other
all.
issue is just that if it's on DS, I can import it. That's about it.
True. Yeah, but it seems like a game that would be a little bit hard to play on the DS because it's so busy. It's so
Yeah,
crazy. There's so much stuff going
you
on all
might
the
want a big
time.
screen for that, actually. It's a good point.
Right. That's kind of what I'm thinking. But that's really a game that I can't wait to catch up on. And in terms of Virtual Console, I really need to download Super Mario Bros.
Oh, it's
3.
great.
I was out of town. Yeah, I was out of town the week that it came out, and then I just got backed up with tons of other stuff to do and never got
Yeah,
around to it.
I got hit in my Mario splurge, Mario Galaxy and Mario 3, two of the best games ever at the same time.
Yeah, I
So
played a
that's
little
pretty
bit of
fantastic.
Mario All-Stars and Mario 3 just the other day, too. So
Do you prefer that?
I do. It'd probably be nice to go back and play the NES version. Just because it's more classic, but the gameplay is exactly the same, so I just can't justify yet another purchase of Mario 3 right now. Someone would have to gift it to me or something. I don't know.
Oh,
Well,
there
here's
you
a
go,
suggestion.
advertising.
Well, I think we've wrapped up the feature, but since we're talking about Virtual Console, let's go out on one more question. We've got Christmas coming up in about a week. Last year, a Nintendo released Super Mario Brothers on Virtual Console on Christmas Day. What do you think they'll do this year?
Yoshi's Island. That's a very festive game, and it's kind of a big gap really, because they've done Mario World, they've done Mario 1 through 3, they've done the import Mario, they've done Yoshi's Story. I think it's perfect.
That's interesting. I'd say Super James Pond, just because it's based on the North Pole, but it's a bad game.
Yeah.
But they may have that as one of the other titles being released that day or something.
One of the also-rans. That's the Wonder Boy shoe-in for this week. My guess is, I guess I'm thinking of just like the biggest game I can think of that's not out for it yet, and I might go with Majora's
Oh, that
Mask.
would be great. I've got fond memories of that at Christmas. I
Yeah.
actually got that and Sin and Punishment for the same Christmas, which was
Ooh.
just the best gaming Christmas ever, by far.
Wow.
Wow.
Very nice. Okie doke. Well, that's the end of the show, and thanks for listening to our very long podcast, in which I ramble incessantly over and over again on various topics of no interest to anyone. And thank you, of course, to Michael and Greg for listening to
Ain't
me do
no
so,
problem.
and for occasionally adding their comments. Alrighty. Well, hopefully after this episode, you'll hear from Carl and Mike at least one more time. I may not be on there. I'm going home for the holidays for a little while, and you would not want to hear me podcast from a dial-up connection, trust me. But I'll be back after the new year, and I don't think those guys will be, so stick around. Lots of interesting stuff coming up in the new year for Radio Free Nintendo. Please check out the site. Subscribe on iTunes, leave us a review, dig the podcast, and send listener mail. For goodness sake,
And
send
listen to
listener
Radio
mail.
Trivia.
What have you been playing?
And listen to Radio Trivia.
What? And listen to Radio Trivia. That's our other very awesome podcast. And our email address for the show is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We read every single email, like all three that we get every week, and we would love to get way more. So get creative and ask us anything you want to know. Tell us a funny story, whatever. Give us ideas. I don't care. Wish us happy holidays. And that's what I'll do right now. Happy holidays, and see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, Radio Free Nintendo fans. This is indeed Carl Castaneda, the podcast pirate, your former host of Radio Free Nintendo, and all-around awesome dude. That's right, I said it. Anyway, you know, I didn't want to leave you guys on a like, they might be back. Well, maybe they won't be. Who knows? But, you know, I just wanted to say that I will be contributing in some form to the next episode of Radio Free Nintendo, whether it be main show or just a little bit segment. I think I'm going to rope Mike into doing the same. So we will have a proper farewell. I guarantee you that. In the meantime, just wanted to tell you that I do trust the show in the hands of Mr. Jonathan Metz, the smooth stylings of the sexiest man. And, of course, Greg Leahy, awesome dude, so I know they're going to do just great. This will probably be my last time editing the podcast, which is strange for me, because I really kind of learned my chops using GarageBand on Radio Free Nintendo, so it's going to be strange not editing something every week or every, you know, 9 days, because I'm always late on this crap, especially with this episode. But, yeah, guys, I hate to ramble on here, so I'll leave you guys to the rest of your week. Farewell. Hopefully not for long.